Good evening, 720 WGN. I was trying to put on my official dramatic newspaper voice, if there is such a thing. I'm John Landecker. It's 9 minutes after 8 o'clock as we welcome once again Corey Moore from the Chicago Tribune and the quote-unquote Rumor Report there. Hi, Corey. How are you?
Huh? I'm good, John. How are you?
Just fine. Thank you. Very happy that you're coming on. Very, very happy.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
You know, I was looking at a lot of stuff that you've been putting together. You've been busy. That's all I have to say. And by the way, I just want to say right now, if the term boner is upsetting to you, well, blame her.
It's all my fault.
It is your fault. The first line of this article, and I went, I didn't know that. But first of all, it said 1908. This is Corey writing. The word bonehead gains popularity in American English. And I thought, really? That's when it happened, 1908? And then explain how I guess it's the Chicago Cubs, right? Who had a hand in making the term bonehead become popular and is still around today because there's a plethora of boneheads. Let's face it. Come on.
I mean, the good thing was it happened during a Cubs game, but it was not somebody on the Cubs who caused it. Yeah, exactly.
So it's this Fred Merkle? Is that who we're talking about?
This is who we're talking about. Fred Merkle was on a team called the New York Giants. Yes. And in 1908, the New York Giants came to Chicago to play at Wrigley Field. And, okay, I'll just give you a little rundown. So
Take all the time you want. Hey, the show's yours. I'm going to go to another room and listen.
take five. Take five, John. Your smoke break. This game, it was a tie game. The score was 1-1, Cubs and Giants. And it looked like the Giants were going to drive in the winning run. And it was Merkle, the Giants player who was on first base, who ended up going all the way around the bases, but then it was soon realized he forgot to touch second base. So it didn't count. So the Cubs were able to have a force out at second base. He was out. And so that's where we get this term, as you said so eloquently, boner. Merkle's boner is what it's called. And that's what we called it in the Tribune. And that's it's known among baseball aficionados today because it was a boneheaded thing to do.
Ah, the things that you learn. I'm telling you.
Every day we learn something new, right?
That's right. And I'm very happy to know where the term bonehead comes from. I mean, you know, I've been saying bonehead for a long time. I never really considered at all where it started and certainly never thought it would be something that had its beginning in baseball. But hey, whatever. Thank you, Fred Merkle, for being a bonehead. That's all I have to say. That
was learn new things every day. And I'm trying to think of other Chicago words that maybe other people don't say or got their start here. I don't know, though. That's kind of a conundrum. I can't think of any off the top of my head.
Nothing comes to mind. And I didn't consider the bonehead to be a Chicago word, but I mean, I guess this is where it starts, right? Is that what we're saying? This is the home of bonehead, so to speak. I think they ought to put that on the welcome to the city. Welcome, take the mayor's name down and put up there. Welcome to Chicago. Originator of bonehead when people drive into town.
The next time we talk about all the things that Chicago created, we got to remember that one. You're right.
All right, now there's another story here that is it's very sad. I mean, it has a decent happy ending, but I remember the story of this Ziggy the 6-ton Asian elephant who was at the Brookfield Zoo and was in chains. For how long did they chain this elephant to the wall?
Yeah. And okay. So we're talking back at a time when people really didn't know at zoos how to take care of animals, in a humane, mostly humane way. And so this elephant actually came to the Brookfield Zoo from producer Florence Ziegfeld of Ziegfeld Follies.
Yeah.
He had bought this elephant for his daughter for her birthday.
What?
And yes. I mean, like I said, this is back in a different time when people would do stuff like this, I guess. But of course, elephants get bigger and
need
somewhere else to live. So I think Ziggy had been a couple of different places before and ended up at the Brookfield Zoo. And there was a zookeeper in particular that took care of Ziggy. And the problem happened, I believe it was in 1941, Ziggy like threw his zookeeper down and was trying to kill the man. And thankfully he was able to escape. But ever since then, this elephant was tied to a wall, was chained to a wall inside of its habitat at Brookfield Zoo and was not allowed to go outside. And so anybody who visited the zoo, you saw this animal chained to the wall. Well, it was 1969 when Michael Sneed, recently at the Sun Times, back then she was a reporter at the Tribune. She made it widely known about what was going on with this elephant, and people started to give donations to help build an outdoor habitat for it so it could actually go outside again.
Because it had been chained up for 29 years. 29 continuous years. It never...
Exactly.
It had chains on all that time. That's unbelievable.
Isn't that so sad? It's absolutely sad. And we have a lot of photos. In fact, we had photos of the elephant attacking its keeper in the Tribune archive. So, if you go to ChicagoTribune.com, you can check out the story.
Did the Tribune just happen to have a photographer out there at the time that this elephant attacked its trainer?
That wild? Yes. I wonder if it was kind of a prolonged attack and, somebody caught wind of it and was able to get out there in enough time to capture it on film. Because you're right. I mean, they couldn't move around as freely, especially with camera equipment back then as we do today. Right. Yeah. So that's what I assume happened. I wish we knew more about that. But Ziggy was able to go outside and it was a big deal. And we had a lot of photos of the elephant outside. So really sad story. It gets sad before the end for Ziggy, but I'll let your listeners go to the website.
They raised a lot of money. They raised a lot of money and got the outdoor enclosure, and Ziggy got loose from its chains and her chains and went out there, and that's how she spent the rest of her time at the Brookfield Zoo. Yeah.
Thankfully. And now today, thankfully, we know a lot more about how to take care of animals. I don't think either of the zoos here in Chicago have elephants anymore.
Yeah,
a lot
anymore.
Of the zoos around the country don't because they need such a giant habitat to live in. So,
More with Corey when we come back on 720 WGN. Corey Moore from the Chicago Tribune is with us. And that is a clip from something, I don't know, I found it somewhere on the internet, and it's that, sort of old stereotypical newspaper description, which probably doesn't even exist anymore. I mean, you guys don't sit around smoking cigarettes and having coffee out of styrofoam cups, do you? No.
I mean, the old timers at the paper used to tell me Tribune Tower was just like fog of cigarette smoke and typewriters and what do they call those things with the ticker tape going
they call it a ticker tape, I believe.
Where things were coming across from the wire. So apparently it used to be that way.
Are you talking news stories or you mean like a teletype
That's what I mean. Thank you.
You mean like Associated Press, United Press International?
Correct.
Kind of thing?
Yeah. That's how all the national and international news would come into the newsroom. Yep.
If I remember correctly, and I think I do, and that in itself is an accomplishment, United Press International had offices on what was called at that time, it was called the Stone Container Building, which was the corner of Michigan and Wacker, on an upper floor, And I don't know, I never really thought about it until right now, but they had a lot of space. And the radio station I worked for at the time was on the fifth floor, so of the same building. So every once in a while, I'd go up there. It was, you know, United Press International. I was interested. And yeah. It was huge. I mean, you'd open the door and go in there, and it's just like, I don't know how many different people that just a whole bunch of people at a bunch of typewriters they were typewriters back then. They weren't computers. Mm-hmm. And you'd hear the noise, which I guess probably is sort of dissipated because everything is computerized and you don't hear the click clack or whatever the term I'm looking for of typewriter keys or teletype sounds that they used to have teletype sound effects, which I would use as a background for some news parody or something like that, until I realized that nobody knew what I was doing. We've outgrown that, John. We don't have the click clack of teletypes anymore.
It is interesting how stuff like that changes so much. I mean, our newsroom is considerably smaller today. Yeah. And a lot of people who go there to work, like you said, they're working on their laptops and a lot of them are wearing, headphones. So it's pretty quiet. I think I think anybody who used to work at the Tribune, if they would go into the newsroom today, it would be really different, really, really different. And of course, we don't go out. We go out for happy hours every so often. But from what I hear, the Billy Goat, everybody was drinking that Billy Goat the time. God.
Back in the day,
It
wasn't an urban legend. It was real. It was for real. Mm-hmm. Newspaper people would go. Wait a minute. There was another one. There was the Billy Goat. And there was another. There was another bar/restaurant that was a watering hole for the newspaper folks because the Sun Times and the Tribune were, right down there.
They were close by,
real close. But the Billy Goat, man. A lot of crazy things happened in the Billy Goat.
I think they still do, but it's a little cleaned up. It's still a huge honor. Recently, I've had a couple of my work colleagues get their names, which we call bylines. So yes. Someone's name at the top of the story is called a byline. Right. And if you've done an incredible job in Chicago journalism, then you get your name up on the wall at the Billy Goat. And it's a huge thing because there aren't that many through the years. It's still somewhere that we'd like to go anytime somebody leaves the paper or we have an occasion to celebrate. We always go to the Billy Goat.
Well, it's nice that still happens because that's been down there, in Lower Wacker. I guess we would call it Lower Wacker.
Right.
I mean, it's not a tourist attraction in the sense that people would know it's there unless they, of course, had done some research to know that it's there.
Exactly.
I don't even know. Can you still get packaged liquor in there?
That's a really good question. I don't know about that.
I mean, it's been, obviously it's been a long time. Since I had any dealings with the Billy Goat. WGN's WGN Radio's old was in the Tribune Tower. Hello.
Yes.
Our studios were in the Tribune Tower. It was like right downstairs, if not downstairs, but you'd get on Michigan Avenue and you'd take the stairs down to Lower Wacker or Lower Michigan Avenue and bingo, there's the Billy Goat.
You're right there.
Yeah. This is well before your time, but okay. Thank you. Cubs curse. My God. David Jennings has so many hidden talents.
Yes, he does.
And some of them ought to stay that way. Hey, wasn't it Saturday Night Live? Billy Goat, burger, cheese,
cheeseburger, no fries. No, Jambalushi. Cheeseburger, cheese with Pepsi, no Coke.
No Coke. And that was Yeah, that really.
That was 1970s, wasn't it?
Yeah, I know, but that really escalated the, escalated, a crazy word. It made the Billy Goat famous.
Yep.
I mean, it
didn't hurt.
Well beyond the confines of the city of Chicago, you know.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
It put the Billy Goat on the map, literally.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, then. We got to take a break. Corey and I are going down to the Billy Goat for a quick pop, but we'll be back in just a moment. Right now, it's the bottom of the hour and time to get into the WGN newsroom. Oh, I got some texts at 312-981-7200. I was talking about, we were talking about Billy Goats and the Billy Goat, rather. Yeah. And I was trying to remember the name of another restaurant that was frequented by journalists, and I've been reminded by numerous people on the text line that it was Ricardo's.
Ricardo's.
Yeah,
yes. Ricardo's. Ricardo's. Yep.
Yep.
Thank you, listeners.
Yeah, a lot of people. I got three or four texts giving me that information, and then I got this one from 630. I find this very interesting. Dear Landecker, recently WTTW aired Chicago's, quote, The Rise and Fall of Catalogs. Corey was featured at least three times. What is that? Come on.
Yeah. Oh, that was great. That was part of the Chicago Story series on WTTW. They asked me to talk about Sears. I had done some work on the history of Sears and the history of Montgomery Ward in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I was on that one. And actually, that's a nice way to segue to the next, I guess, series of Chicago Stories starts this Friday on WTTW, and I'm in that one too.
Well, what do you know about? And what is the topic of this one?
This one is all about blizzards, and I'm excited. They asked me to be a part of it, but I'm even more excited because Tom Skilling is in it as well. So I can't wait to see the whole thing put together and to see how he explained some of these things, because I miss that man. I follow him on Facebook and he's in Hawaii living his best life a lot of the time. And so he's earned his retirement well, but yeah, I can't wait to see him on TV again.
Blizzards. Ah, yes. Yeah. I've been there for some of them. I mean, I guess it was 1978, 1979.
Yeah.
Right? Somewhere in there. There was a bigger one.
Yep.
I don't know if there was a bigger one in 69.
There was one.
Yeah.
In the 60s. Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't here then.
Neither was I.
You weren't even born. Your parents weren't even born, probably. Oh, man. Come on.
Did you ever get trapped? One of my biggest fears when we used to work in Tribune Tower and we'd hear, you know, there would be bad weather. I was always kind of worried that I'd be stuck at work and wouldn't be able to get home. Did that ever happen to you?
You mean like in an automobile or public transportation, or what was your means of getting home?
Well, that's a good question, because you know, I heard of people at the Tribune in the olden days, like they would get put up at the hotel Continental next door so that they wouldn't have to fight that. But yeah, did you ever have any mishaps driving home or taking public transportation?
I don't recall any mishaps. I mean, I remember, you know, everybody digging cars out of, well, there weren't mishaps, but there were a couple other things. So let me get this straight in my mind. First of all, the whole idea of staying downtown and being put up in a hotel, that actually happened. I did that.
You did?
I was working for a radio station doing mornings, and it was unbelievable. The weather was just horrible. I can't remember exactly what year it was, but they said, hey, do you want to, instead of going home, you know, and battling all this and then having to come back, we'll put you up at the hotel. It's basically across the street. I said, sure, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was a thing that could happen. Where was I going with this other thing? I completely lost track of my own mind. What were we talking?
Okay.
What? Besides,
that happens to me all the time. we have that in common.
Yeah. The 1979. Okay, so it's downtown. What else was going? What else did I was just talking about? Oh well, maybe it'll probably come to me about 10:35 tonight. Oh, that's it.
Well, what about the one in 2011? The one where people got trapped on Lakeshore Drive?
Yes.
Did you get stuck in that? Because I know one of our photographers and a reporter got stuck in it.
You're not going to. Well, you can believe this. Okay, so I had a doctor's appointment at Northwestern Medical downtown.
Yeah.
Okay? And I had to get to it. And I had a four-wheel drive car. And I'm driving in from Indiana, and it is unbelievably bad. And I come around, I get off. What did I get off? I'm coming around like when you used to be able to come around the museum, science or field museum rather, and then get on the Lakeshore Drive. And they were beginning to close the drive.
And oh my God!
I'm like, I gotta gun this car, and I'm telling you it. It was not a new car, but boy did it work. I'm the only car on Lakeshore Drive. I'm not kidding. I'm driving, and we obviously couldn't take it the same way home. But I didn't realize it was such. Well, I don't know why I didn't realize it. That it was a historical thing. But yeah, when they closed the drive, I guess that is a pretty big deal. With the snow. Yeah. No, but I've never. No, Chicago. I mean, you know, we get the snow. I mean, everybody knows that. It's not like something new is going to happen. You deal with it. And I remember maybe it was 79 when people started scoping out parking places in front of their houses and putting up folding chairs and brooms and things like that to like reserve it for themselves, you know?
For dibs. Dibs. Yeah,
dibs. Dibs. Absolutely. Crazy. Yeah. 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 Okay. More with Corey. We'll come back on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, John Landecker, thank you for listening. It's 847. We're with Corey Moore from the Chicago Tribune. We were discussing a little bit ago the ever-changing landscape of newspapers and reporters and teletypes and newsrooms. And during the break, I suddenly thought of Robert Redford, who unfortunately passed away recently, and the newsroom scenes of the Washington Post in All the President's Men. I mean, that's what we're talking about. That's what that kind of ambience, that's what it looked like back then. At any rate, there's another thing that you have written about, Corey, that brings history to the auction block coming up. When did you say it? Okay, Red Grange. Everybody know Red Grange? Galloping Ghost, University of Illinois. Blah, 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 you know, 1930s. So what's happening with Red Grange? There's an auction.
This is really exciting. We were actually given this tip by Christie's Auction House that as far back as they could tell, a Red Grange game-worn jersey has never been auctioned. So this is apparently the first time one has been identified and authenticated that Red Grange actually wore it, and now it's going to be coming to auction. I don't know many details about about how it landed in the hands of an Atlanta doctor, but this is part of this doctor in Atlanta liked to collect sports collectibles, Hollywood memorabilia, and radios. So he sounds like a guy who you and I might have wanted to chat with, John.
I'll bet,
He unfortunately died at the age of 89 in 2024. And so this Red Grange jersey is coming to auction this October. it's part of this doctor's collection, and it's really like one of the marquee parts of this auction.
We're talking about a jersey, a game-worn jersey now, from from like 1933 or 1934.
Correct. So that would make it toward the final years of Red Grange's career with the Chicago Bears. He had a knee injury in 1927, so he didn't have quite the speed as he had had at the University of Illinois and in his first couple of years with the Bears, but he was still a key part of the team. And what Christie's has been able to do is authenticate this jersey. And we were actually, Marianne Mather, who's one of our photo editors at the Tribune, she and I worked on this together. She was able to go back into our archives and find a couple of photos of Red Grange wearing this jersey. It's a cream-colored long-sleeve jersey, a little bit different from what we would consider a jersey today. It's long-sleeved. It does have stripes on the sleeves. There's no GSH initials on there because George Halas was still coaching them. And there are no names on the back. It has the number 77 embroidered in felt on the front and the back. An interesting part of this jersey is apparently... Apparently it was like a onesie or a unitard or
I'll tell you what that is. Please. What that is. Okay. Please. So, old jerseys, and this went on for a while. I guess it's called in the article a crotch strap. And what it was is you put this football jersey on, right? Mm-hmm. And you'd want it to stay inside your pants, right? So it had a snap that went, you know, in your crotch.
In your nether regions?
In your nether regions from back to front. And you would snap it. And it would close. And that helped, the theory was that it helped it stay in place during those important times in the game. I hadn't thought of that in a long time. Wow.
That's hilarious to me. And apparently Grange did not like this
crotch strap.
And so this jersey has it removed. And part of the reason they were able to authenticate it is because it was well known and documented that when he got a jersey, he wanted that part taken out. And apparently when a jersey was issued to a player on the team, they would also take out any of the manufacturer's labels in it.
Really?
Yeah, which I thought was really interesting. And apparently there are very few jerseys similar to this one, but of the few that are out there, Christie's was able to have it authenticated to say, yeah, he absolutely wore this. And it was a road game jersey. That's why it's cream colored. It's not navy. So to me, it's fascinating. And so I did a little bit of research back in the Tribune archives and to see, Christie's thinks this could sell for upwards of $300,000. Sure. And to put that in perspective, Grange, who was well paid to leave the University of Illinois and join the NFL, which was still in its infancy in 1925, it's essentially what he made in his first game in today's dollars. He made like $25,000 back then, which is not too far off from $300,000 in today's dollars. So I found that fascinating. So we'll see if a collector, you know, it, as we know with these auction estimates, it could sell for higher, it could sell for lower. But I think since this hasn't come up for auction previously, I think it's an exciting piece that, you know, I'm sure it would be great in a museum, or a collector of sports memorabilia would love it as well.
Yeah. It looks like it should look. I mean, it is like beat up. It's worn. It's got some stains on it. It looks old because it's old.
yeah.
And it looks like it's been worn because it's been worn. It's surprising. It is. Yeah. It's surprising that it has survived, if that's the right word, all these years. I mean,
absolutely. And I asked Christie's, you know, how can you document this? Do you know anything about it other than it was in this doctor's collection? And they said, no, unfortunately, since he's died, there's not good documentation of how he was able to get it. But you're right, John. We have a picture of it on our website at chicagotribune.com. And it's in very good shape for being 90 years old, a little over 90 years old.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And no mothballs. They don't use those either, but, you know.
I don't know. That's the one thing you can't tell from the photo is, yeah, what it smells like.
Yeah. I mean, now that you bring that up, there could be a few possibilities, but hopefully they've taken care of that, although it could add to the authenticity in its own way, I guess.
There you go.
All right. As usual, Corey, fabulous to have you on. Great topics. And once again, tell everybody how they get that vintage Chicago Tribune delivered to their inbox.
Oh, yes, it's absolutely free. You do not need a Chicago Tribune subscription. Go to chicagotribune.com/newsletters and sign up for mine. It's called Vintage Chicago Tribune. I'm actually working on it right now because it's coming out tomorrow. And then it'll be in your email inbox every week after that.
I will be looking forward to it. And when do you appear on Channel 11 Chicago Stories about Blizzards?
Yes, that's this Friday on WTTW. So check your local listings. Indeed. Yeah, thanks for the plug, John.
No doubt. The more Corey I get, the better. Thanks for being with us. Talk to you again soon.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me.
You bet.